now co-host of Prop Points, along with Nick, Jeff Erickson. He's Nick. Prop Points, which follows us each and every Monday through Friday. Nick joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at the very controversial Twitter handle of Whalen, substituting the one for the L. You already hear him just with sigh already. Why so controversial?
I'm in too deep on the Twitter handle.
Yeah.
I'm in too deep, guys.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I could change it. I've looked into it. There aren't that many available options out there. I've had people tweeting at me, you know, look, if you have ideas, you could check, you know, see what's available out there. Tweet it at me. I'm willing to crowdsource this. Guys, I will say, I think the comeback last night was significantly more impressive and significantly crazier than that game five.
Me too.
Pistons Cavs.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't even think that's close. Like that was you know, a tough choke by Detroit, but this is an all timer. I mean, the Knicks ended the game on a 44-11 run. The Cavs, you know, even once you get to overtime, the Cavs scored 3 points in OT, which is obviously part of the reason the Knicks were able to end up covering that number. I mean, this was just wild. I mean, the over was dead all night. Neither team could hit a three. I think the Knicks were like 2 of 19 from beyond the arc in the first half. Knicks -6.5, -7.5, whatever number you got, that was dead all night. A lot of props that were popular last night fell dead all night, and some of those came through late in the game. I will say, though, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this, guys, having watched the game, Harden wasn't good. You know, I think he's taken a lot of the heat for what happened down the stretch. But you go back and watch those possessions, I actually thought Harden played okay defensively. A lot of really, really tough shots, you know, these high kisses off the glass from Jalen Brunson on some of those buckets in the fourth quarter.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I did point out, like, some of those Brunson buckets were just the one to tie it at 101-101. I don't know if they made it up there where he shifted it to his left hand in midair. And yeah, I mean, it is against Harden, but it's just so much.
Brunson's damn good. Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing. They crazy. When they signed him as a free agent, this was their, like, they were making a big splash, and it was Jalen Brunson, and Knicks fans just lost it. Right. They're like, this is our big signing. Mm-hmm. This is a guy. That dude has scored more postseason points than anyone since putting on a Knicks uniform in the league. Obviously, they played tons of games. But it's just, he's been unbelievable. I'll ask you what I asked Kelly. Cavs, can you come back from something like that? Or is that just a question the media asks of each other, and pro athletes are going to be like, yeah, we lost, but we'll be okay?
This is a really tough one to come back from. I don't know if you can, to be honest, because, you know, the Cavs were obviously up 22 in the fourth quarter, but they were in control of this game, I thought, throughout. And, you know, there was a point where you're like, okay, it feels like maybe they should be leading by more at the half, but, you know, the Knicks had the entire third quarter to kind of capitalize on that narrative after shooting it so badly in the first half. And, you know, the Cavs basically tripled their lead going into the fourth. I mean, this is one that you have to get. You absolutely have to get. You know, OG Anunoby, I thought, looked a little bit rusty offensively. You know, that was a big advantage for the Cavaliers. Again, the Knicks shot it horribly for the vast majority of this game. And, you know, I think there was an argument to be made that, yeah, the Knicks were due to probably cool off offensively after this all-time heater that they were on coming into the series. But this was supposed to be the game that all came crashing down. And not being able to capitalize on this, if you're Cleveland, I don't think they can come back from it. I really don't. I mean, it's already a team that we questioned in terms of mental toughness, in terms of consistency game to game, and blowing this kind of opportunity, I don't like their chances. I mean, I think they take at least a game in this series, but I think this is one you had to win if you thought the Cavs could actually win this series and go to the finals.
Knicks are a 6-point favorite in game two tomorrow night. Totals at 215.5. Mm-hmm. Adjusted series price, which, Nick, you're telling us you don't want any part of, on the Cavs is about +330. You have no interest in such a number.
Not really. Not really. And honestly, coming into the series, I was of the belief that this would be a lot closer than people thought. You know, the Knicks were bigger favorites than OKC was over San Antonio, which, I don't know, maybe makes sense. The numbers were fairly close. But I thought if you're the Knicks and you could choose to play the Cavs or the Pistons, I would much rather have faced Detroit. I think that's just a more straightforward matchup. We limit Cade Cunningham and we live with, you know, this cast of random role players beating us, whereas, you know, the Cavs have Donovan Mitchell, they have Harden, they have Mobley, they have Allen, they have all these guys that you have to worry about. But again, I think this is, I mean, it's the conference finals. You can't just afford to throw a game away like this on the road. Specifically, you know, that same energy is going to be there in that building tomorrow night for game two. I would certainly expect the Knicks to come out and shoot it a hell of a lot better than they did early in this game. I think Anunoby is better as the series goes along. And, you know, I think one of the big keys, guys, for the Knicks, and this kind of happened midway through the Atlanta series, is Mikal Bridges is kind of back. You know, he's not next Mikal Bridges by any means, but he is no longer a glaring negative on the offensive end. Even just getting like 10 to 15 points from Mikal Bridges completely changes things for this Knicks team.
I knew those five first round draft picks would pay off.
It's showing up. Yeah, so we're getting excited about like 17 points now. We're like, I'm with you though, Nick. He's come back alive.
Thunder are 6.5. We're seeing some sevens out there. Point favorites tonight against the Spurs game two. Kind of right around where it was in game one. Nah, regardless of what the outcome was, Spurs win that classic. Spurs are up 1-0. They have home court. Series adjusted price. Well, Thunder just a tick of a favorite now. Minus 120, Spurs even money. What do you think about this one? The proverbial must-win situation, as they say, for the Thunder tonight. How do you think this goes?
I do think the Thunder win this game. I'm not sure I'm going to be willing to lay it with the number because I think these teams are so evenly matched. And if nothing else, you know, I think what we saw the other night in game one kind of validates what we saw during the regular season. That was such a big question of, okay, how much does this actually matter? So many of these games were months and months ago, and so much has changed since then. But the Spurs match up really well with the Thunder. They play really confidently against this Thunder team. And they did all of that with their starting point guard turning it over 11 times and not having, you know, your steady veteran presence in De'Aaron Fox, who very well may be out there for game two tonight. So a couple ways that I'm looking to play this game. I do lean under on 216.5. I know we had a ridiculous over in the second overtime in game one, but I think this series is going to look like game one for the most part. I mean, these are two of the three best defensive teams in the NBA during the regular season, Detroit being the other. Now, there's a strong case that SGA will play significantly better. I thought that was an alarmingly bad game by him in game one. He'll be better. Maybe the Spurs end up shooting it better from three, but the pace, guys, was in the low 90s, 92.9. That is way slower than both of these teams have been playing in the postseason so far. I don't think that defensive intensity is going anywhere. So I see this as another under spot. Props wise, I'm going to keep riding unders on Chet Holmgren. We were fading him in game one. I'll take the under 24.5. on the PRA. He's now gone under this number in all five matchups against the Spurs this season. He has three assists in like 155 minutes against San Antonio. He can't score against Victor Wembanyama. And then a couple other kind of deep cut props, guys. The over 5.5 rebounds plus assists for Isaiah Hartenstein. Only played 12 minutes in game one. I think we see more of him, especially if Chet struggles again. And then I don't mind jumping on a low number with Dylan Harper over 11.5 points. For one, there's a chance De'Aaron Fox might end up sitting out this game. Mm-hmm. And two, Harper was so good in game one. I don't know if you could just send him back to playing 20 minutes off the bench.
I don't think you can, man. I really don't. Interesting. I think you're right about SGA. Can't expect him to play like that. I guess the counter to that would be like, will they get that kind of performance from Caruso, though, off the bench if you're a Spurs backer?
Exactly. And that's part of the reason I like the under.
Nick, appreciate it. Thank you so much. We'll check you out on Prop Points today.
All right, thank you, guys.
1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, right here on the network. Coming back on A Numbers Game. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro. Will Hill joins us now, ladies and gentlemen. He is the host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. Shoulda, S-H-O-U-L-D-A, I believe is the correct English spelling of that. Shoulda Bet More podcast. He does it three times a week. And of course, he is a VSiN host as well. He'll be hosting tonight with Femi on VSiN Tonight, VSiN Prime Time. VSiN Tonight, we don't do that anymore,
nope,
right? VSiN
no,
Prime
not.
Time. At not the Will Hill, two E's on the V. So much intro. My God, it's Will Hill, everybody. How you doing?
Gilly, what's going on? Yeah, and of course, forever grateful that you were able to step in and stop me from naming it. What was it again I was going to name it?
Well, glad you asked, Will, because it's been a while since I told this story.
Oh, I don't know.
I told Will, I said, Will, listen, you should name this. Will said to me, he says, I really want to name this podcast. I regret not wagering a larger amount of money because I would have gained much more money in my account. And now I have deep regrets about it podcast.
So it's like a slightly complicated SEO.
And I said to him, I said, just name it Shoulda Bet More. And he was like, good idea.
Good call.
That's how it happened. Will, thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate that. By the way, if you want to tune into the Shoulda Bet More podcast, you can just scan that old QR code and it's Willie three times a week. Who's your latest guest?
Monday had Chris the Bear Felica. Wednesday, today's episode, Jonathan Von Tobel. So it's been fun. Glad to be doing it. Glad to be doing it 3 days a week. And Sunday's 11 o'clock Eastern. You can hear it on VEASAN.
There you go.
Who'd you have to pay for this color scheme for the little lower third graphic? Like neon green jumping out.
Yeah. Very nice.
It's well done, Will.
Casual Wednesdays for Will, appreciate by the way, it. Today. He was told. So he's here with a t-shirt on. He's really putting in effort. I want to point that out as well. Okay. I'll ask you, before we get to your plays, I'll ask you what I asked Kelly, what I asked Nick Whalen earlier, which is, can you come back from that last night if you're the Cavs? Is that just some stuff we talk about, or is this truly one of those games that is just off the charts, unbelievable that you lost, and you're cooked after that? Where do you stand on this?
I usually think the latter, but I'm somebody who was on here Friday before game six of Cavs Pistons. It said, oh, no way the Pistons are going to rebound from game five. They're home. They're up 9, 2:40 to go. They've got the ball. And then you lose that game and then you're going to go on the road and win in Cleveland. It's not going to happen. I love the Cavs in game six. And what happens? They go out and they bury the Cavs in game six on the road and then they get buried in game seven, which is really weird to go back and think about. So I'm usually of no, they can't recover. The mental, hangover, all of those things. But I swore I would use that game Friday night as a reminder that, hey, don't overthink this. These guys are professional athletes.
Yep.
These guys all have pretty good lives and fat bank accounts. They don't get as upset, as emotional with these games as we do. We often kind of, relay our emotions onto what they think or, how they're going to think. It's like, hey, how I feel is how they're going to feel. And it's not always the case, but man, that was a tough one.
It does qualify as a tough one. All right. What about, we'll just throw them both together. What about tonight's game? OKC, the proverbial must win situation, favored by 6.5, 7s. We're seeing both of those against San Antonio down 1-0 in the best of 7 Western Conference Finals. And then tomorrow night's Cavs Knicks game 2 back at MSG.
I'll start with tonight. I like OKC. This is one where it's a trend I'm pretty loyal to, where a team loses game one at home. You almost have to just turn your brain off and forget what you saw in game one and just back the team in game two at home, because so often the team loses game one at home and they absolutely roll in game two. We saw it in the first round with Detroit and Orlando, saw it last round with San Antonio and Minnesota. Now, look, logically, these teams are not 6.5, 7 points apart. So hitting submit on OKC -6.5 or -7 does not feel good. But it's such a strong trend over the years. The team that loses game one often rolls in game two. So I don't feel great about it. I mean, I know how good San Antonio is. That guy on the other team for San Antonio, he's pretty tall and he's pretty good. But I just think we've seen this so many times where this trend gets home. So I will take OKC minus the points tonight. And I don't know if you want to get into it now. I have a few things on this series that I think are interesting. Caruso, to me, 100-1 MVP. We saw Iguodala win this award in the finals 11 years ago. Man, 11 years ago. Jeez. Guarding LeBron. And I actually don't think he deserved to win. I thought they should have given it to Curry. And if you were going to give it to anyone, you could have given it to LeBron, even losing effort, neither here nor there. But Caruso guarding Wembanyama. They're putting a lot of attention towards SGA, who had a bad first game. Holmgren's done nothing through a game here. Is it possible Caruso at 100-1, just the whole narrative of, hey, this is a guy who's given up a foot to Wemby. He's still guarding him. He's obviously going to cool off some on offense, but he's got a 30-point game in the bank with 8 threes. I think at 100-1, Caruso is a very interesting bet, man. I would love to be a fly on the wall. I'm still buzzing from that game a couple nights ago. I would love to be a fly on the wall for the other 28 GMs. I can imagine the group text of, man, what the hell are we supposed to do going forward? This is not a fair fight. These two teams are just so much better than everybody else. And the other thing too, the last thing on this, Durant, LeBron, Curry, Kawhi, Giannis. I wonder if a few of these guys are texting with each other too, saying, hey, unless 3 or 4 of us get on the same team, we got no shot. So I wonder if there's a little, maybe these guys have made so much money. They've won their championships. They're happy where they are. They're not worried about it. But I wonder if a few of these guys try to meet up and say, hey, if we don't get on the same team somewhere, join somebody's team, we got no shot going forward.
And by the way, everyone in my generation hearing you hypothesize that is like, oh, I bet they are these ridiculous young kids, the way they think. You think Michael Jordan would have ever gotten on a phone with someone? That kind of thing.
I think the other part of this, that like I kind of hate how much I saw game one, but like it's the reality. Like the Thunder lose this series. We've been talking about the Thunder war chest for years now. Like if they go and lose this, it could finally be let's package together a bunch of first round picks and add a major talent to this roster. Like, it's terrifying.
Hey, you're a Lakers fan. Will, can you explain to us why they let Caruso go?
Yeah, Jeannie Buss, who I guess the Lakers just hurting for money. They didn't want to pay the luxury tax. I don't remember if it came down to him or Tim Horton Tucker, and Horton Tucker, yeah, who's was cheaper at the time, just completely mismanaged. Just he was this good with the Lakers. Every Laker fan will tell you, man, they love this guy. He was just so good defensively, such a winning player. And man, that team really got off track after the bubble because they won a championship. They were set up to win more, and they're just they were very money conscious, not going over the cap, things like that. Just completely bungled that one.
You hear the whole Nick Wright thing about the Lakers bubble is like, oh, LeBron's he's a Hall of Famer based on his Lakers career alone. Like he's a LeBron stan. And then the counter was like, it's not even a title in the bubble. It's a whole thing going on. It was interesting. Interesting. Anyway, about the Knicks and the Cavaliers, what's the bet on this series now?
I like Knicks in six plus 500. That's where I was coming in. That's where I still think I am, just because, look, Knicks have the best player in the series in Brunson. They've got home court. And man, there were some as great as Monday night was in game one. And what is better than sports just the last two nights? There were some stupid things on both teams. Bridges not calling timeout. That ridiculous foul by Towns where he's trying to hold the guy's arm for no reason at all. And Atkinson not just doing anything different defensively, letting Harden get cooked out there. That being said, I don't think there's like a ton of difference between these two teams. Remember at the end of the year, the Cavs kind of tanked their way into the four seed. The Knicks are a three, by the way. You don't get too many three versus four in the conference finals, but I don't think there's miles apart from these teams. So to me, the Cavs get a couple games here. Knicks winning in six is sort of the sweet spot where I like that payout at plus 500.
Plus 500 on the Knicks winning in six. You like that? Knicks in six?
I do.
So the Cavs will Cavs will bounce back a little bit, in other words, is what we're saying.
Yeah, maybe not game two, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Knicks in six at 6-1, correct? 6-1 or 5-1? What do you got, Will? 5-1.
I've seen plus 500.
Plus 500. Knicks in six. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the star of Wishnev Wednesdays. He's the star of the Megapod, the Beating the Book Megapod. And he's the star of the Showtime docuseries Action. It is the great Todd Wishnev, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Toddy, good morning.
Good morning, Gilly. How are you feeling after I smashed you in tennis in Bethesda, Maryland, at court that you didn't even know existed?
You guys, how many days did you guys play?
Half of my trip was in D.C., then half in Miami. Yep. Todd, kind as he is, drove down from Pittsburgh, PA to play tennis. What did we play, three times, two times? What did we do?
We paid two times by ourselves, and then we played at fancy, posh, congressional country clubs.
My buddy Juan.
On the hard true clay.
Is a member. So we got into congressional, played a little hard
true. Fancy.
That's right.
Todd, I did hear that you were nice enough to drive down there and that you guys played. I never heard the end of the story.
Oh, he crushed
Never me. Heard
oh,
the well, result.
He got crushed.
He crushed. There you go.
I will say this. I didn't even play that bad. Todd was so pretty awesome. Yeah. Pretty good at this tennis thing.
There you go.
What are you weighing in at, Todd? Are you losing weight, huh?
Yeah, I'm down about 287 now. Blood sugar's down to about 119, so that's real good.
Let's go.
There we go.
48 days with no bad carbohydrates like rice or pizza or noodles or pasta or bagels or, you know.
he can go through more if you'd like other options.
Popcorn, pretzels.
All right, I got a text from you midweek on the group exchange. So, Gilly, we can do a segment about whose K-stats are misleading from a seasonal basis versus the last 4 weeks. And you have examples. What say you, sir?
Yeah, we can talk about that briefly. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was the thing about the individual. I've had a lot of success lately messing around with these individual guys versus individual pitchers. But first, we could talk about that. The biggest example of this is the Padres. The Padres are now like ninth in strikeouts in Major League Baseball, which is, you know, okay, 9 out of 30. Getting up there early in the season, they were like in the 20s. They weren't striking out at all. But if you look at their last, you know, 30 days, they're now second in strikeouts in the last 30 days. So they've become like the strikeout machine, but they're probably not 100% priced in like that. So that's what's nice about when I've been keeping the database of what pitchers have gotten how many strikeouts against how many teams. You know, I've been able to track the team, you know, and you even see it on teams that are like big strikeout teams, like the Reds, all of a sudden for a couple games in a row, they'll stop striking out and you'll see that little, and then they'll come right back and start striking out again, you know? And it's interesting because you can, and I've mentioned this before in the show, you can kind of target two type of pitcher as well, which really doesn't show up in statistics anywhere. But, you know, like, how is this team done against mediocre right-handers who have been priced at like 4.5 strikeouts or something, you know, or 3.5 strikeouts? Then you see that. And then, oh, how is the team done against, you know, the big guns of strikeouts, like a Dylan Cease, who's always priced really high, or a Mizorowski, who's priced really high, or a Chase Burns, who's priced really high. So I found it really interesting going through and getting a sense like, okay, well, the Rays don't strike out against anybody. But, oh, well, wait, if they go against a really big name, big time strikeout, they may actually let him go over. So it's kind of interesting.
Do you struggle at this point of year? Because, again, we're not even through May. Which is reality for these teams? So, in other words, if they perform one way the first 4 weeks and then, you know, counter to that since, what's the baseline for you? In other words, because that was always a struggle for me early in the season when handicapping baseball. You really don't have enough of a robust sample size yet to really determine what that team really is.
To me, I'm always looking at the more recent stuff. I always find the more recent stuff more, to me, it should be more weighted than probably most people think.
Okay. That's how it falls for you. Back to what you were talking about before, exact result bets. What do you mean?
Yeah, I've been messing around with these. It's really interesting because I've been looking, you know, you can go on ESPN or MLB, a lot of these places, they'll show you how teams have done, how guys have done against individual pitchers. For example, today's game, Joe Ryan has a little bit of, a lot of guys don't have a lot of history nowadays, especially because the schedules have been so watered. So now you don't have as many teams facing the same team like 19 times like they used to. So a lot of guys don't have a lot of history, but a guy like Joe Ryan's been around a while. And against the Astros, for example, today, Pena, who's leading off, has faced him 17 at bats and he's struck out 8 times. Makes sense because Joe Ryan is a right-hander who tends to strike out more right-handers, probably because of that sweeper that he has. You know, another guy, Christian Walker, 4 out of 7. You might say, 7, it's not that many. I tend to think that these small sample size for at-bats against individual guys is more than you would think. I think it should be weighted more than you think. You say, 17 at-bats is nothing. It's something. It really is. You know, the other day, for instance, I played, last night I played a bunch of these and almost all of them won. But like O'Neill Cruz was 5 strikeouts and 9 at-bats against Christopher Sanchez, the left-hander for the Phillies. He's been striking out everybody. Sanchez has been outstanding this year, and especially against lefties. And O'Neill Cruz is an absolute strikeout machine against everybody. But now you put him in against a tough lefty. You look at his historicals against him. 5 out of the 9 times he faced him, he struck out. So the price was +155. Now you're going to say, well, 5 out of 9, it's not that much, but it's a lot, especially when you only have to win that bet 40% of the time to make money, you know? And so to me, it is something. You know, last night I had a bunch. I had Christian Yelich against Ben Brown for the Cubs. Ben Brown for the Cubs is kind of like a sneaky, people don't think of him as a strikeout guy. He's a strikeout guy, and he had a real decent size sample size. I think it was maybe like 9 at bats and 7 of the times Yelich struck out or something crazy. And I bet it +225. I mean, remember, when you're getting these robust prices, you know, it really doesn't matter. You don't have to be that right. You know what I mean? To hit them. I hit Terang +280 the other day against somebody who had struck out like 6 out of 8 times, you know, so it's very interesting.
The O'Neill Cruz one, just to clarify, was first at bat to K, right? Was +155.
But you can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can do it during the game too, because a lot of these books will put up 3 or 4 batters in advance, you know, later in the game. Like Pete Crow Armstrong last night, I saw him in his first at bat. He has terrible numbers against Mizorowski. He strikes out against everybody, but against Mizorowski. And then midway through the game, it was like +125. And you're like, wow, +125. I'm getting nothing for that. Yeah, but are you watching the game? Mizorowski's striking out everyone like he always does. And now it's Pete Crow Armstrong. All he has to do is strike out, you know, less, you know, 45% of the time you're making money, you know. And of course, he K'd pretty easily. That's the other thing is, if you're watching a game and you see, hey, wait, sometimes these pitchers really have it. you know, when they're on their way to one of these 10 or 12 strikeout games, those prices aren't going to change that much, you know, versus what they originally are. Right. And if a guy's really on and he's going against a guy who strikes out a lot, it's probably worth it because you're still going to get some plus money.
The other one I remember you had the other night was Schwarber. This is Friday night. He had two dingers, and Saturday Bubba Chandler's going for the Buccos. Been a walk machine.
That so was interesting.
You took Schwarber to
Bubba
walk.
Chandler walks the world. He walks the world. And like you said, Schwarber on Friday night had two homers against the Pirates, and the Pirates lost the game. They were up like huge 7-3. They ended up losing 11-9. And I thought to myself, okay, Bubba Chandler, Mr. Walk Machine against Schwarber, they're not going to pitch to him, or they're going to be real careful with him, right? Of course, he walked. It was plus 450. Now you say, oh, plus 450. Remember, the best teams only walk 12% of the time, right? So plus 450, you think, I'm not even getting that good a price. You know, the Steve Fezziks of the world will come on with their mathematics.
Here we go.
And absolutely no real world knowledge.
We almost got
and tell
it.
You, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Because they live for the math. What they can't see is inside the numbers. Some of those people are myopic and just math oriented. I'm not just talking about Steve himself, no, but he is not. Really one of the greats.
We're so close to getting through without a shot, but we got a shot for Bell. Wish
I can go on Friday and come on and explain to you, you know, when he is missing the point.
By the way, this is all wonderful. Are you letting people into the Discord for all of these plays while they're happening at this point? Yes or no?
Right now we have almost 2,500, so I've kind of backed off.
We'll stay tuned. He'll open it up at some point. Thank you, Toddy.
Yes.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Do not forget about our discounted annual subscription. Smarter bets start here. Limited time offer, won't last much longer. A full year of VSiN Pro is what I'm referring to. Normally $240, now just $199. And when you sign up today, we'll give you 2 extra months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro for less than 50 cents a day with promo code PRO. Get access to daily best bets from VSiN hosted guests, real-time DraftKings and Circa betting splits, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, 24/7 video and full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all our special edition betting guides for every major sport throughout the year. The offer ends soon, so head to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code PRO. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. We got tweets. Beat the book. Y'all are the best. Let's save quicker and quicker.
You know what tweets, I figured out last week, Gil, is that our new subscription price is cheaper than a pair of JNCO jeans.
How much is JNCO jeans cost?
$240.
Are you in the market for jeans?
No, I'm not. But we were talking last week about how the baggy jeans are just so back. Like, you see all these kids, man?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're so back. Like 1997
yeah,
all
skinny
over
jeans are out.
Yeah, all out. Yeah. Big baggy jeans. JNCOs.
I don't know if I like baggy jeans.
Me either.
Yeah.
I did back in the day. But
the numbers guys. Question for Todd and Gil. No opportunities for tennis in-game betting? Oh, you talk about in our matches? Let me tell you when the best time to get in on in-game between me and Todd. Whenever I have a break point, that's when you get in on Todd. My mental fortitude is not spectacular.
I don't know whether he's asking about that or just do you guys bet tennis in-game?
I don't know that Todd bets tennis besides my preflop, but as far as me, if I happen to be watching a match, there are times where I will, but it is not the majority of my tennis betting. I used to do it with Rafa Nadal on serve on clay all the time.
By the way, I'm going to forget this if I don't bring this up now. NHL breaking news?
Yes.
? Kelly says. Cale Makar to miss game one tonight. Listed as day-to-day for the Lanch.
Oh, wow. He went Lanch.
Vegas, my Lanch.
Vegas Golden Knights, Colorado Avalanche. The reason Kelly calls them his Lanch is because you have a Colorado-Carolina Stanley Cup final matchup.
That's right. What's a whopping plus 125.
Plus 125.
I'm retiring.
Game one tonight in Colorado. Cale Makar out officially?
Out.
Out. All right. So you are the enemy of all Golden Knights fans then, basically, tonight. Colorado minus 182. Game one favorites again. Collision course with Carolina, perhaps. Carolina series begins tomorrow night, I believe it is. And they will be going for their record-tying 9th straight win to start postseason.
Yep, tomorrow night.
Talk some hockey. Let's talk some baseball. Or baseball, I should say. Oh, by the way, there it is, courtesy of ESPN. Well, Bednar said McCarr's day-to-day.
I got a reporter saying he's out.
Okay. Jared Bednar, head coach of the Avalanche. But you're saying he's out now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll miss game one.
Oh, we'll miss game one, but day-to-day thereafter. Yeah. Okay, out tonight in the Western Conference Final Game 1 versus the Golden Knights. Minus 182. We'll see if that line shifts at all or if that's already baked in. Paul Sporer joins us, talks of Major League Baseball, courtesy of Aggressive Guest Line. Follow him on Twitter at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R. And, of course, he is the host of he works at FanGraphs and has his own podcast there, of course, as well. And joins us now, as he has since the inception of this here program. Paulie, how you doing?
I'm well, Gil. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You are a Detroit Tigers fan.
Unfortunately.
Can we start there for a second?
Yep. Sure can.
It's a division where, again, let me just raise my hand. There at the top is the Cleveland Guardians, 6 games above 500. And I just look at it, I just shake my head. I'm like, are they doing this
again? And no one thought they would be there again. Myself included.
Yeah, at least they have a positive run differential. Not quite at the bottom of the division, but actually co-cellar dwellers with the Kansas City Royals, another team that a lot of people liked, are the Tigers and the Royals. Who's winning this division when all is said and done? Where's the bet?
I don't know, man. Like, because it is so hard. Obviously, I know you understand that it's difficult to make that prediction on any division right now, even ones that look won.
Your Tigers are plus 450. Only the Guardians are a bigger favorite.
And it's so health dependent. Like, I get why they're second in there. Because can you trust the White Sox pitching right now? Can you even trust their hitting? Their hitting is exciting, but it's very swing and miss heavy. So it's probably going to have these ebbs and flows on the south side this year. When they're electric and they're hitting the bombs, it's great. When it's flyouts to the track and 40% strikeout rates for 2 weeks at a time, it could be a tough watch. Twins, I know they're ahead of both the Royals and Tigers, but does anyone think they're better than either of those teams? I don't think so. So then you're looking at the Tigers and the Royals, two teams, like you said, that people were in on, Tigers being the favorites, of course. If Skubal comes back closer to the front end of this injury timeline, I do think the Tigers, and I don't think I'm just being a homer here, I think they got a great shot to storm back and get the Gardos.
Okay.
We've seen this division never be settled early, whether it's the Guardians chasing somebody else, or in this case, them being the chased this time. Again, I think it really, really comes down to when Skubal comes back. Troy Melton is on the rise, returning from injury for the Tigers. He could be instrumental. Mize just returned. So it all went bleak at the same moment there for the Tigers. They were playing poorly. They lost Mize. They lost Skubal. All hope is lost. They're terrible. Still not that far behind.
And it's still so early, right? We're barely.
So early.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to do this by ourselves, but since we have you here, can we go to the National League divisions, guys? Because I'm curious where Paul stands on all three of these, because we talked a little yesterday on the show about the AL West. Everybody below 500, or the A's won yesterday, so now the A's are 500 atop that division. I'm actually secretly rooting for every team to finish below 500, a la 1994 AL West. And we talked a little Rays Yankees. I'm curious where you stand. Braves have an eight game lead over the Phillies. 9 over the Nats, 11 and 11 and a half over the Marlins and Mets respectively. Is there a bet here on the Phillies at plus 425, or can you not get there?
Oh, I can get there. Not aggressively. I said that maybe a little more eagerly than I should, because I don't want to imply that I'm running to the window for it, but it's very much on the table, because we never thought that Atlanta was this good, and then they get these injuries and we thought, you know, they're going to be in deep trouble. Honestly, like, they were the Tigers in spring, right? In terms of expectations coming in, injuries decimate them. Well, then they got thrown in the trash. Well, the Tigers got the injuries and they played like it. Atlanta got the injuries and played like the best team in baseball. And I don't quite get it though, still, Gil. Yes, they've got Sale, a true ace. That's awesome. And Strider's back now. And I don't think he has to be an ace, although, you know, he's got to be pretty good. But Bryce Elder and Martin Perez, I mean, they pulled them out of nowhere. I just don't think either of them can keep it up all year. J.R. Richie's not the dude. In fact, I think he was sent out. They have no depth. So what happens when the next wave of injuries come? Because there's always another wave. just like when you're standing by the mm-hmm. ocean, there's always another wave of injuries coming for every single team. So what happens when their next wave comes? I just don't know that they have the horses. Now, they have a cushion to sustain a few bad waves, right? Atlanta does.
Yeah.
But I don't know that many. Meanwhile, Philly getting stronger. Wheeler back. I know Lizardo's annoying, but he's still remarkably skilled, one of the best pitchers in baseball. I know that sounds crazy to say, folks. Even with his duds, he's awesome. And their offense is great. Yes, I think the Phillies are not just live, but like very much appealing to get in on right now.
I asked that because Steve Fezzik has bet the Braves multiple times mm-hmm. here to win the division, and I keep reminding him, I said, it's still May. To the Central, you and I have been kind of simpatico on the Brewers, who are in first place now by a half game. Mizzy Rowski just brilliant again. Oh, plus so 190. Great. That's still a play, or do you like anybody else?
Oh, yeah. I think that's still a little bit of a play there because I think they should maybe be a bigger favorite right now. I think we should at least be in the twos with that. More due to what the Brewers keep doing than it is any sort of dig at the other teams, because I like the depth of the division, and I think those are quality teams behind them. I think the Cardinals' offense is exciting. I think the Cubs as a whole are pretty exciting. They're kind of like Atlanta, though, being 29-20 with the injuries that they've sustained. When they lost Horton, they were already short, and I'm like, oh, what are they going to do without Cade Horton? But there they are, 29-20 for the Cubs. And then the Reds and Pirates, I think, are both, you know, solid, and they're going to give you a fight every three-game set there. I still think the Brewers should have, they keep doing it year after year. And they have depth. They are a team that sustains waves, and they just call the next guy up, and they never seem to be fazed by it. So, yeah, I think they're still the favorite here. If I were going to go elsewhere, I'd probably go to one of the two bottom teams, to be honest. I worry about the Cardinals pitching. They just got a bunch of soft tossers that I just don't buy. So I worry about how much they can sustain, and then the Cubs' depth. So if I were going to get cute and go off the Braves, I think I'd go Reds or Pirates there. And the Pirates have some offense to go with the pitching. They're not just Skeens and 25 dudes now. They've got some real offense. So I think that they are still live.
And last question, it's a very simple one, 30 seconds. Can you bet the Padres at 7-1 to win this division, the NL West, a half game behind the Dodgers?
No, I can't. I'm sorry. Wow. I don't think you should. Don't think you should.
I love it.
Very simple
still
answer.
Still a lot of time.
Simple question, simple answer.
You could send me the money. I'll use
there you go. Paul, book it for you.
Say, yeah, yeah.
No doubt. The right advice.
Oh, no. Darn it, lost. I mean, I spent it the moment you gave it to me.
Okay. I don't know if I expected that answer, but I kind of expected that answer. Paul, thank you. As always, Sleeper in the Bus, the name of the podcast, which I couldn't produce out of my brain when
first
started this. You may have noticed. Thank you, Paul.
Take care,
y'all. Everybody. At Spore on Twitter.